thank you everyone for coming. It's great to see you guys and some new faces. I'll try and keep this fairly short because it's kind of always a bit more interesting to have a debate and a discussion at the end of these talks than it is for me just to kind of waffle on endlessly. But I'll start by outlining, I mean, the purpose of the talk is really just outline the party case and what it is we stand for and why it is that we stand for the abolition of the wages system. We'll start with the society we have right now. Obviously, the society that currently exists is one based on minority ownership and control of the means of production. So that means that the land, the railways, the factories, food distribution is all owned by a tiny minority of people. And production takes place for profit, not for human need. So if it's not profitable, it doesn't get produced. One question we should ask ourselves is, how did the wages system come about? And it depends really on who you ask and where you ask the question, whereabouts in the world you want to ask the question. If you ask the capitalist propagandists, they'll tell you that the wages system and capitalism kind of just organically developed, and that, you know, human beings traded and then money became used as a way of increasing the efficiency of trade, and that we kind of naturally evolved into this social system. But this is just plainly untrue. So putting aside many places in the world, like from Africa to Australia to America, where land was forcibly and violently taken from indigenous peoples, even just in the UK, we had things like the Enclosures Act from the 18th to the 19th century, in which roughly 5.5 million acres of common land was forcibly taken and placed into private hands. And with it came mass evictions of agricultural communities. And that number, that 5.5 million, that happened from the late 18th century to the early 19th century. And that was just in England and Wales through parliamentary acts. As our Scottish comrades know, there was also the Highland clearances, in which massive areas of land that were formerly commonly owned in small crofts became privately owned. And these clearances, these enclosures, they were a win-win for the ruling class, because it meant firstly that land could be privately owned and used to produce food at a profit, in Scotland, particularly the sheep industry. But what it also meant, most importantly, was that you had a mass of dispossessed people who were forced to have nothing other than their labour power to sell. And so, as an example, in Glasgow in 1750, the population was about 32,000. And then by 1851, it was over 300,000. And that was a mass of dispossessed people who'd come from the Highlands, who were then forced to sell their labour in the factories and the mills. So that's the scale of the operation. As Marx points out in his introduction to Capital, he says, "Capital comes into the world dripping from head to foot, from every pore with blood and dirt." And he's referring there not just to the enclosures, but obviously also to slavery and to colonialisation that created this world. So why abolish the wages system? Well, firstly, the wages system is exploitative. The surplus value of our labour as workers is owned and controlled by the capitalist class. And it's not just exploitative, but it's also alienating. And alienation for Marx and Marxists takes many different forms. We're alienated from the product of our labour. So we don't own or control what we make. It ends up feeling like something that's outside of us, that we then have to buy back off of the capitalists. We're alienated from the labour process. So we don't shape how we work. We don't control the way that we work, the pace, the purpose, and the methods. This is all set by other people. So our labour is disconnected from who we are. We're alienated from other people. We're pushed into competition with our fellow workers, and we're treated as commodities. And this strains our relationships and it weakens our sense of human solidarity. We're alienated from nature. We're cut off from the natural world. Nature is reduced to a resource for profit, creating a rupture between how we live and the environment that we depend upon. And most importantly, we're alienated from ourselves. We're alienated from what Marx would call our species being. We lose the chance to express our creativity and our human potential. Work becomes about survival, not about the self-realization of our species. And then we also have, of course, with capitalism, ecological disaster. So a society based on endless economic growth on a planet with finite resources is naturally and inherently unsustainable. According to a Reuters article, in 2024 alone, about 8.1 million hectares of forest were lost globally. So this is an area about the size of England, just in 1 year was lost. And the UN statistic states that over 47,000 species are currently threatened with extinction. So the case for socialism isn't just about our human comrades, but also about our non-human comrades. And I think that ought to be emphasized more by socialists. There's war. War is an extension of the war of the marketplace, in which different gangs of capitalists compete for trade routes, spheres of influence, natural resources. And it's the working class that are forced to go off and fight and kill and be murdered by our fellow workers. We've owned this building since the 1950s, and it's quite a humbling thought to know that there were people who walked in to this building who would have been conscientious objectors in both the First and the Second World War, declaring the socialist mantra at the time, which was a bayonet as a weapon with a worker at both ends. Who are the SPGB? We were formed in 1904 as a breakaway from the reformist and authoritarian Social Democratic Federation. We're a leaderless organisation that holds, like Marx, that the emancipation of the working class must be the work of the working class itself. We, like Marx, define socialism as a stateless, moneyless society based on production for human need, as opposed to sale on the market. I'm going to read you now the Declaration of Principles of the Socialist Party of Great Britain. One, that society as at present is constituted is based upon the ownership of the means of living, i.e. land, factories, railways, etc., by the capitalist or master class, and the consequent enslavement by the working class, by whose labour alone wealth is produced. That in society, therefore, there is an antagonism of interest, manifesting itself as a class struggle between those who possess but do not produce, and those who produce but do not possess. That this antagonism can be abolished only by the emancipation of the working class from the domination of the master class, by the conversion into common property of society, of the means of production and distribution, and their democratic control by the whole people. That is, as in the order of social evolution, the working class is the last class to achieve its freedom. The emancipation of the working class will involve the emancipation of all mankind without distinction of race or sex. Quite a bold statement in 1904. That this emancipation must be the work of the working class itself. That as the machinery of government, including the armed forces of the nation, exist only to conserve the monopoly by the capitalist class of the wealth taken from the workers, the working class must organise consciously and politically for the conquest of the powers of government, national and local, in order that this machinery, including these forces, may be converted from an instrument of oppression into an agent for emancipation and the overthrow of privilege, aristocratic and plutocratic. That all political parties are but the expression of class interests, and as the interests of the working class is diametrically opposed to the interests of all sections of the master class, the party seeking working class emancipation must be hostile to every other party. And that, I'm afraid to say, includes your party, which isn't your party, it's another party of the capitalist class. The Socialist Party of Great Britain, therefore, enters the field of political action determined to wage war against all other political parties, whether allegedly Labour or avidly capitalist, and calls upon the members of the working class of this country to unite, to muster under its banner, to the end that a speedy termination may be wrought to the system which deprives us of the fruits of our labour, and that poverty may give place to comfort, privilege to equality, and slavery to freedom. Now, there are a lot of supposedly left-wing alternatives to the current wages system. Lenin, for example, believed in combining the state and the wages system into one body. And we saw the tyranny and the exploitation that came from state capitalism in the USSR. And as for people like Corbyn and Zara Sultana, they claim to be socialists, but what they're actually advocating for is a form of capitalism in which we get a few extra crumbs off of the master's table. The only viable and practical solution to the world's problems is socialism, a moneyless, stateless society based on production for human need. Capitalism tells us that we're greedy and that we're selfish and that we're bloodthirsty. We in the Socialist Party of Great Britain tell the capitalist class that they can speak for themselves. Workers demonstrate their moral character every day through small acts of workplace solidarity. We can and will organise ourselves into a leaderless organisation of the working class, for the working class. And I'll just end here with a quote from Marx that I memorised a long time ago. Take off your banners, the conservative motto, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and instead inscribe the revolutionary watchword, the abolition of the wages system. There you go. Cheers.
You have been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. If you would like to find out more, you can visit our website, spgb.net.